In this 50th episode of the Fisheries Podcast, I talk with Scott Gritters from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources about a quest for 50 that he goes on every year. Joining me, I am Nick Kramer, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter at Fisheries Pod or on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast. This is the 50th episode of the Fisheries Podcast, and I'd always planned on doing something special for reaching this mark, but I didn't quite know what until I was listening to a different show and heard a story from today's guest, Scott Gritters. Scott was born and raised in Pella, Iowa, and attended Iowa State University. Scott began his career in fisheries in 1985 as a seasonal employee at Black Hawk Lake in western Iowa, and in 1986 at Bellevue along the Mississippi River before graduating from Iowa State in the spring of 1987 with a degree in fisheries and wildlife biology. Scott then worked short stints for both the Missouri and Utah Conservation Departments before being hired back in Iowa in 1988 as a technician at the Long-Term Resource Monitoring Station in Bellevue. Scott has bounced around different Mississippi River stations since returning and has been employed as a management biologist along the Mississippi River in Bellevue since 2011. Welcome to the podcast, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nick.
So management biologists on the river don't quite do the same management activities as their Atlantic counterparts. I guess, what are some of the ways that you and your counterparts work to manage the fishes of the Mississippi River differently than us impoundment folk?
Yeah, you know, the Mississippi is just a huge multi-use resource. And really, it's the only designated system by Congress that is designated both nationally significant merchant waterway and a nationally significant ecosystem. So I guess compared to my counterparts, I probably attend a lot more meetings. Working through just a myriad of issues in an attempt to balance those two agendas, the high navigation use and the nationally important ecosystem. So I really have the pleasure of working with many people from different agencies, really dedicated folk, both on the transportation and ecosystem sides. And I guess in my work, I always try to make sure I'm leading Iowans in the protection of our natural resources, as our mission says. So other things, I guess I work probably more with permitting issues, probably threatened and endangered species a little bit more. And of course, lately, flooding issues, which is not just, you know, to the Midwest, but all through, Iowa and Kansas and everywhere else.
I know one of the stations in Bellevue is fairly close to the river. Have you had to pack up some of the stuff and move up to higher ground yet?
We do not. We are high enough here that we do not flood badly. Matter of fact, I had a couple folks in town from the Colorado fishing game today, and, you know, that was their first question, is, why aren't you guys flooding like we hear on national television? And the simple truth is the Bellevue area and a lot of northeast Iowa, a lot of the riverway is in national refuge lands, and, you know, we just don't build close to the rivers.
You mentioned some of the stuff you do pertain to fish and permitting and all that, but you also keep tabs on the waters that they swim in, and you've been part of some projects that have helped improve some water quality for some of these fish, specifically cleaning up pollution on Rock Creek. I'm not too familiar with this project, so what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, you know, that's a project I worked on several years ago, kind of unique. It involved a fertilizer plant that spilled ammonia and a lot of ammonia. It probably spilled it sometime in the early 1970s. Eventually, this contaminated the groundwater in that area. And I guess I became involved. We were taking samples out on the Mississippi River, downstream of the confluence of Rock Creek, which is not a large stream. But we always found elevated ammonia levels downstream of the where this Rock Creek entered the Mississippi, and eventually worked on tracing the source back to and it traced right back to the fertilizer plant, which the plant is no longer in operation. It was quite an old plant, and just eventually went out of business, not due to this issue, but, you know, it just grandfathered itself out. But the contamination was still there. And matter of fact, the groundwater was so contaminated that at times, Nick, the water would boil to the surface in spots, and it would kill all the terrestrial vegetation that it encountered. The ammonia was so thick. But some of this ammonia was leaching into the stream called Rock Creek, and really is one of my first opportunities to work with a huge company. And we really came up with several novel approaches to bat the ammonia out of the water. We used, of course, wetlands, but we also built a lot of stream riffles, planted a lot of prairie and willow vat along the stream, and it really made a huge difference on how much ammonia came out of that stream. And to tell you the truth, I probably worked on that project 20 years ago, and we still monitor it today.
So has it improved to the point that fish have returned to the waters?
Well, you know, Nick, in this business, you learn that fish are highly adaptable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even though some of this water would kill most fish instantly, there were some species that adapted to the high ammonia levels unbelievably. We take those same species from another creek and drop them in there, they would turn up immediately, but somehow they persevered in the stream, although at a much reduced rate. Yeah, you know, we definitely got the ammonia levels down. We're still working. We'll never get it to zero. That's just not going to happen. But we definitely drove the ammonia down, and the riffles and some of the other things definitely helped the fish populations there.
And this didn't happen to be one of those nice trout streams that surround Bellevue, was it?
It was not. It's a stream. It is just out of the trout stream areas, the driftless area in Iowa. But it did have some cold water influences, some springs, did have a little bit of watercress and that kind of thing that we normally see in a trout stream. But it had a lot of species, some introduced species, but some also really unique species like the grass pickerel, or I think what they call redfin pickerel now, as at the lower end of the stream. So it was a highly diverse stream, but the middle stretch where the ammonia was leaching in was definitely being affected by the ammonia.
Now, in another instance, you helped push for some more remediation for a different accident. A train had spilled some oil along the Mississippi River. What was affected by that spill, and did you do some of the same remediation projects, building wetlands and prairie strips with the funds acquired from this project?
I learned a lot from this one. Probably the first environmental disaster site I worked on, and basically five train locomotives entered the water, and I guess entered is a nice way of saying they plunged off 80 foot of track and landed, you know, in a fairly deep side channel of the Mississippi River in a real remote location. There's just miles to any road or town. So fortunately, no one was hurt, but the petroleum products, and there was just a lot of other harmful materials in the train, and the train was carrying, you know, all made it into the water. So there was a lot of natural resources that were affected. Mississippi is full of natural resources, but I guess a couple of them were the mussel bed that the train landed on. There's a lot of freshwater mussels, or a lot of people call them clams, in that area. The shoreline trees were all oiled, and there's an interesting salamander species called the mud puppy in this area, and we knew they lived in this area. It's a state threatened species. Those were definitely all impacted. So we were able to do some really interesting mussel stocking back into the area that was damaged. We got some funds to study the mud puppy populations and figure out some of their critical habitat in case we have other spills, and to really protect certain areas. And then finally, we did buy a really gorgeous portion of the bluff lands adjacent to the spill. It was also adjacent to one of our natural resource areas. And so we purchased that site, beautiful overlook of the Mississippi River. And we still work still today. You know, that site is still being monitored with those funds that we were able to procure. So it took a while. It wasn't easy, but I learned a lot.
Oil spills like this, I guess, aren't too uncommon along the river. How many spills have you had to investigate during your career?
Well, I don't like this question, because knock on wood, I've not had any yet this year. But probably, Nick, usually a couple a year. But it's not always trains. It can be trucks, barges, pipelines. You know, they all have issues of some sort over the years. It's simply the Mississippi has a lot of cargo going up and down, and the potential is always high for, as they say, an incident. So, but none yet this year.
And by now, some listeners are probably scratching their heads a little bit, trying to figure out how this is a special episode for the 50th episode, but we're about to jump into it. And you've described yourself as an avid fisherman when you're not out on the river, sampling fish or remediating after oil spills and the like. But your passion for fish, I'm sure, originally led you into this field. And you recently turned that passion into a pretty interesting adventure. starting with trying to catch 50 fish in the year after you turned 50. I guess, how did you come up with the idea to do this, and what were some of the more oddball fish that you caught during that year?
I guess the whole idea started as a whim. It started with me turning 50, and I really had never celebrated my birthdays much. I mean, they just kind of came and went. Of course, you have a little party or something, but I never really reflected on it. But I reflected a little bit more on my 50th. I guess it's a milestone, no different than 50 on your podcast, right? And it may have started with some of the birthday cards I got, because frankly, I got a group of great friends, but they're kind of mean as well. And I got one card, and I'll never forget it. It said, "Congrats on making it to 50 years old. Now you don't have to worry about dying young." And, you know, so I think it's just all told, I just reflected on this one more. And really, my 50th birthday, I just decided, the only thing I really decided at first is that I was just going to take that day off and just go out and catch 50 fish that day. And it was May 15, 2014. And the day started off really nice. It was just beautiful out. And I decided to go trout fishing. And I really did put a hurt on the trout. The trout were on the bite that day. And I caught a lot of them. And I probably caught 30 some trout. But I did catch all three species Iowa has to offer. I caught which is our native fish, the brook trout. But I also caught, you know, rainbows and browns. And I probably caught more browns than anything. So after that, I hit a farm pond that I fish quite often. And I caught a largemouth and crappies and bluegills. And I caught some red ear sunfish. And the day started turning colder and it started to rain. But I really felt like I was on a roll. And I finished the day wading a small river that I also fish once in a while. And I went after smallmouth bass and I caught some shiners and things too. But the day ended really a lot colder than it started. But the day ended, I was fishing that stream smallmouth and I was catching some really nice smallmouth. And I was watching this flock of turkeys out in this field. And I was kind of watching them fishing. And all of a sudden they just got up and all of them just soared right over my head and went up the hill and roosted for the night up in the hills. And I really thought to myself, man, this is just a perfect birthday. You know, it's doing what my passion was, and it was a great present to myself. But soon after that, I went on my annual trip that I take to Canada. I go up past Thunder Bay, up to a place called Pasha Lake Lodge. It's near Beardsmore, Ontario. And this is one of my favorite fishing haunts, and I applaud Canada for the fantastic fishing it has. But it's a 14-hour trip up there. And my lifelong, long-time friend that I fish Canada with each year, I've been going up there approximately 20 years. We began this discussion of, you know, what would it take to catch 50 species of fish in a year? You know, I caught 8 species on my birthday, and I just started penciling out. I got nothing better to do than, ride on this trip up to Canada, and I just started penciling out what species I could potentially catch, and could I catch 50 in a year? And so I spent the rest of my birthday year from May 15 to May 14th the next year trying to catch the other 42. So this idea just kind of snowballed from there. Now I do something goofy every 50 fishing year wise. The whole thing, I guess, really started off purely self-serving. And that was the fact that I wanted to fish more. I wanted to be outside more than I was. Nick, you know, and you can probably find this with yourself. It's easy to talk yourself out of going and doing something, fishing or anything, simply because of life or weather or bugs or whatever. But this kind of forced me to go fishing, which is one of my passions anyway. So it's not a tough thing. And I guess when all these adventures were over, I always said to myself, man, that was worth it. Yeah, sure, a lot of fun. But I truly never intended to give talks or podcasts like you're doing on the subject. But if it inspires some people, I guess, great. And people think it's goofy or dumb, you know, I really don't care. Also, I really swallow my pride on what I catch. You know, I'm a big fisheries biologist, and I don't really care what I catch, you know how big or, you know, what species it is. So that has been crucial on these quests. So
what were some of the more oddball fish or some of the ones that you wouldn't normally catch in a normal year?
I did go some places. I went caught a band-tailed sculpin in Alaska, just thinking off the top of my head. That's an oddball. You know, all the sculpin are just completely goofy-looking fish with big pectoral fins and, you know, fins sticking everywhere and big mouths. And so I caught a band-tailed sculpin in Alaska, as well as a lot of other really neat fish, such as Arctic grayling and halibut and those kind of things. I did go to Florida, too. I caught blowfish in Florida. They're goofy-looking fish. That eat coral. Very cool. A lot of people think they're poisonous to hold them, which they're not. And just thinking locally, I guess I caught a lake sturgeon out of the Mississippi River. That was totally unintended, but extremely fun. So, you know, I caught a lot of, you know, to get 50 species, it was quite the variety of fish, I guess.
Yeah, so then after the year was up and you turned 51, I guess it wouldn't be quite as fun to simply catch 51 fish the following year. So then what did you go with after that?
So it had been 2015, and there I decided to catch a fish in 50 different bodies of water, just 50 different types of, you know, named water bodies. So some were big, like the Atlantic Ocean, and some were small, like the local creek outside of town here. Do you say creek or creek? I don't know how you pronounce it.
I say creek.
Okay. I'll go with creek then. So, but that was a lot of fun. I believe I fished 52 bodies of water, and I caught fish out of 50 of them. So I did pretty well.
And then another birthday comes around. So now that 50 fish and 50 water bodies are both out of the way, I guess what's left for an avid angler to pursue?
I did something a little different. I wanted to catch a fish on 50 different lures. You know, anglers just have tackle boxes loaded with gear and generally only use the same 2, 3, 4 lures all the time, right? And you know, I have as big a tackle box as anybody. I just got lots of equipment and poles. So this kind of quest just kind of forced me to use some of the rest of the things that were in my tackle boxes. And some of the neat things were I used some vintage lures, some really old-time lures from the 40s and 50s. But overall, I guess I learned that some lures really can catch fish and some really catch the fishermen and don't work well at all. So that's what I did in 2016. I caught 50 fish on 50 different lures.
I'm sure there was one of those lures that you used that had probably been sitting in your tackle box for 20 years and you finally used it, and now it's probably going to sit there for another 20 years before you touch it again.
I a lot of times tell the story of there's a lure in there that I think of my tackle box, that, especially when I was a kid growing up, it was called the Lazy Ike. And it's just kind of a bent banana-shaped looking lure. It comes in a variety of colors. But I was up in Canada, up by this Pasha Lake Resort. And one day I just pulled that thing out. My friend Forrest, who, again, I fish with up in Canada, he had his grandpa's old tackle box, and he had a lot of vintage lures in that tackle box, and he gave me a Lazy Ike. Now, I have seen the Lazy Ike since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, and I had never fished with it. All I ever heard that it was made in Iowa, in northwest Iowa somewhere, and I tried to fish that, and this lake was the most pike-infested lake you could ever get on. It's a type of lake you really don't want to put your fingers in the water when you catch a fish, you know, because it's just not sure if a pike might not grab your fingers. And I threw that Lazy Ike, and I did terrible. I threw that thing, and I could not catch a fish on it. I had one pike come up to it and then turn away, and I threw that thing for a long time. And I was just bound and determined I was going to catch a fish on it. And my brother and some of his friends were fishing the same lake in another boat, and Forrest was catching fish left and right. And those guys were all just reeling in fish left and right. And there I said, I could not catch a fish on that thing. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, a fish grabbed the thing, and I just flipped it over into the boat. And I was just so relieved. And to tell you the truth, I had it very poorly hooked. It came off right away. And it was just a little small pike. And I was like so relieved. I said to Forrest, now I can get this thing off and I'm going to throw a number 5 MEPS or some known pike lure back on. And I was looking up and he handed me another, this old vintage lure called I'm going to mispronounce it, but it's called a Castui Lazy Ike. It's a different version. It's a jointed version of a Lazy Ike. And I looked at him and he smiled like, you need to try this one now. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I don't know when that lure was made. I did read about it. It was made after the original Lazy Ikes, but by the same company. So I tied it on and I threw that thing out there. And first I reeled it too fast. And that might have been my problem with the Lazy Ike, because the gear ratios back in the 40s on a reel were much, much lower. But I slowed the retrieve up, and man, this thing looked just like a leech swimming through the vegetation. It was amazing. A lure designed in the 40s and it 40s, 50s, I don't know, but it was amazing how it swam through the water. And I knew I was going to catch a fish on it. Matter of fact, I threw it out once and I got the reel retrieved out. I threw it out again. And I knew I was going to have a pike, and instantly a pike grabbed that thing. So that one probably only took me 2 minutes to catch a fish on, where the other one took me probably an hour. But a good experience.
So now we're into 2017, I believe, and I'm sure you've started to scratch your head on what to do once your 53rd birthday comes around. And I'm sure your friends and family have thrown out quite a few suggestions to you to try, but you ultimately settled on just taking 50 different people fishing. I guess, was it more challenging trying to rely on 50 other people to want to go fishing when you did?
Yeah, you know, this was more challenging. Again, most of these quests are totally self-serving. You know, I'm going to go catch this, and I'm going to go find 50 species. And I'm not used to doing that, I guess, you know. I do like to share resources, and that's why we got into this profession. So I decided that I was going to fish with 50 different people, but they had to catch the fish, not me. So, and like you alluded to, this was in a lot of ways the most challenging. You know, I think fishing is an awesome sport. It's a lifelong sport. And one of the reasons it's so great is because you can do it with people, or you can do it by yourself. There's no right or wrong to it. You can fish a long time or a short time, but you can fish with people or you can fish by yourself. And for a lot of these challenges, you know, sometimes I had people with me. I have a lot of friends that like to fish or like to go on. They know I do these kind of goofy things, and they enjoy going and doing them. But sometimes I don't have people, because when you have to get that many, you got to get it done regardless. I wouldn't call it a task, or I wouldn't call it work, but you do have to be mindful that you got to keep moving on it. And so with the 50 people challenge, I was totally at the mercy of others wanting to go fishing. And it really started slow. I had a couple people. I had one person that really wanted to be the first person I fished with. You know, I think a day or two before, they canceled because of life or, you know, something. You know, they're valid excuses. But there's another person out there, Lori. She wanted to go with me, and she was mad that I was going to go fishing with somebody else the first day. And then when I said, hey, they canceled, we can go. No, I can't go that day. And I thought, oh boy, I've got to do this 50 times now with 50 different people, of trying to match my schedule with theirs and getting them out. So it really started slow, but it really picked up steam. I'm not a huge Facebook person, but I do have a Facebook page, and sometimes I just post some of these quests, you know. And to tell you the truth, people came out of the woodwork wanting to go fishing, and I could easily gone with another 50 people if I had had the time. Some of them were, I just grabbed my friend's kids and went out. But I had a lot of people that I'd never fished with before. I believe 17 people I'd never fished with before that I fished with, which was a lot of fun. And then there were some people that I think I fished with a lot that I never went out with that whole year. So, but once I got rolling, it got going. And I always told the people that once they catch a fish, they're dead to me. You know, I'm going to take you, we'll go somewhere, and once you catch a fish, I'm going to help you or whatever you need. But then once you get one, you know, you're done. You can keep fishing if you want, but I'll probably lose interest. So, just kidding. But it was a challenge. And again, as all these quests were, it was, you know, I was glad I did it when it was done.
Now, you said you fished with 17 people you'd never fished with before. Have you gone fishing with any of those 17 people again since then?
Boy, that's a great question, and I don't know. I don't think so. Since then, I've fished with a bunch of other people that I've not fished with. I almost considered doing 50 more at one time, which would get incrementally tougher, but there was a lot of people that I really wanted to fish with that I didn't. But I also fished with, there's certain people that I absolutely had to fish with that I did. Like, I wanted to fish with all my immediate family. My I tried to get most of my nephews and nieces and things like that too. You know, it just, I got most of that done. And there's just a few other people that I just made a note that I want to fish with for that quest. And all these quests, I always have a little twist in them of some sort. There's a couple things that I really want to do in them. And so I could get another 50, I believe, you know, Facebook friends and things like that. I've had a lot of people ask since, so I try to be accommodating as I can.
And unless I'm forgetting one along the way, I believe we're all the way up to this year.
I have one in between there. I had 2018 because I go birthday years. So
I guess I did skip one. So
yeah,
what was your adventure in 2018?
Okay, that I thought was the most fun one or most challenging of them all. I wanted to catch a fish in 50 different counties. This was mostly in Iowa, but it also included Canada, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Missouri. Of course, I live in the tri-states area, so Wisconsin and Illinois are just across the river from us, and I'm there a lot. So that's not so hard. But and we take vacations, family vacations in Minnesota, and I do a couple Canada fishing trips a year. But I wanted to venture a little bit more into Illinois, and you know, I used to work for Missouri, so I wanted to do some fishing there too. So most of my counties were in Iowa. I believe I fished 53 different counties, and I caught a fish in 50 of them. But a lot of travel for this one. I could hit 5 counties in a day if I really worked at it. 5, maybe 6. Really, this involved some trips. So sometimes friends would not own me with it, and a couple times I just went. You know, kind of weekend, I get up and just go and hit counties, and it kept getting further away from where I live, which was all right. I got to see a lot of the state of Iowa and other states. Seen a lot of water bodies when, you know, I worked as a fisheries biologist and I've had several jobs. Some of those water bodies I've stocked in the middle of the night when we're hauling fish, you know, with the DNR. And I'd stop at a place and go, that's really a neat looking place. And then we'd be gone, or we'd sample it or something. And this gave me an opportunity to go to a lot of those places that I had seen in my career, or I'd seen a sign to. As I go down the road, you see a lake sign and a, you know, arrow pointing that direction, but you never take that road because it's out of your way or you're in a hurry or all those things. And this made me turn at those things and go to them. And I did a lot of mapping, just trying to get the most direct route that I could hit counties, maybe hit counties in the corner. But it was a lot of fun. So 50 different counties.
And when you're traveling around, did you find any new water bodies that you hadn't fished before that you're planning on hitting again in the future?
Oh, no doubt. And, you know, it made me a better biologist, especially with all this flooding that we've been having. And I'm sure you guys are experiencing flooding too. But so now people ask me about certain spots that I've been to, and I know how to get there. And I give them alternative places to go that I really didn't know that much about beforehand. Now, I don't linger in these spots too long. If I can catch a fish right away, I don't generally just drive in and catch a fish and leave, but I also don't stay a ton. I mean, I try to get a feel for what the park's about, what it has, hiking, trails, camping, you know, try to catch a fish. And some places, literally, I cast and I catch a fish sometimes on the first cast within minutes. And other places, I work and work and work at catching fish. But it made me a better biologist, knowing about all these different water bodies. And it made me a better angler, too, because I really had to be adaptable to weather conditions and different bodies of water. So a lot of fun. I highly recommend it, just trying new places. And I don't remember exactly how many new places it was that I went to, somewhere in the 20s, I believe, that I'd never fished before. So quite a few.
So now that brings us all the way up to this year, and by the time this episode comes out, you'll be about 2 months into your adventure for the year, and I guess I don't know what you have planned for this year, what you've got going on right now, so why don't you tell us what you're working on for your 55th birthday?
55th birthday, yeah. Getting old, so I really... you know, I really was indecisive about what I wanted to do this year, and probably was some of these other years too. What I really wanted to do is catch a fish in 50 different rivers. I tend to really love river fishing. I like all forms of fishing, but rivers and streams really where my most passionate is, you know. So I was heading to fish 50 rivers, but again, we've had this extreme flooding. Frankly, through all these quests, the last few years, flooding has just been a really a big issue, getting this done. So many places are flooded. So I decided to do something else. I decided that instead of going after, you know, flowing river systems, see if our weather tames down. And I'm planning on fishing 50 different like barn ponds and small ponds. This is something I did as a kid. I grew up in southern Iowa, fish farm ponds all the time, constantly. So I want to visit a lot of those old farm ponds that I fished when I was a kid, but also some new ones. And I've already gone and fished, found some new farm ponds and places I've never fished before. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'd rather hit the rivers, but they're flooding badly, so I'm gonna hit this farm ponds, and it's already been a lot of fun. I've talked to new landowners that have just been great, letting me fish their places. And again, I'm gonna visit some places I used to fish as a kid, and that can be good as bad. You know, it can be good if they're still really good fishing the way I remember them, and it'll be bad if they've died out and silted in. So, but we'll see. Plan on catching up with some of my old buddies I fish some of these places with. There's a few places that I must go to fish, some ponds that I definitely are going to walk into. One really close to my hometown of Pelo, it was a private area, and now it's in public fishing area or public wildlife area, but the access to it has all been blocked off. So I'm going to have to walk back in there, and I'm curious what I'll find when I get back there, if those ponds are still as good as what I remember. They were old coal mine ponds. So I'm looking forward to it. Like, it's already been really neat. Again, meeting with some landowners. I'm also going to fish some ponds that I've worked with landowners on to, you know, either build their pond or restore their ponds. We get a lot of farm pond questions. I tend to help quite a few people with farm ponds, even though I'm a Mississippi River biologist. You know, we just get a lot of questions on farm ponds. So I'm going to visit some of those. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm already psyched about places to go. I'm also going to hit some ponds you wouldn't think of, some ponds that are in urban areas. We've got this, we're trying to get a better urban fishing program with the DNR. You wouldn't think of Iowa as an urban state, but we really are. And we're really trying to get these people that fish in urban areas a place to go. And I know where these ponds are, and I've told many people where they are, but I haven't fished them myself. So I'm going to hit some of those, a lot of those, to tell you the truth, and see what it's about. Are they easy access? Can I catch fish there? You know, why send people to places that you're not willing to go yourself? So I'm going to do some of that. Should be fun.
After this year is over, have you already started brainstorming what you're going to be doing the next year or the year after that? I know you're probably going to want to revisit the Fish 50 Rivers and Streams.
I do want to revisit that. People offer me 50 challenges all the time, and some people come up with great ideas. I think Jeff Kapasko, who I think is on your show, if I remember right, he had a great one, like fish 50 different bodies of water on school campus. And I've always kind of thrown that out there, but I don't think I'll do that one. But just you know, things like that are out there. I keep a list of 50 different pole types, and I have like 35 right now that I've listed out that I think I could catch a fish on. You know, these are all like different kinds of fly fishing poles, bait, you know, spin casters, obviously, but all the different, you know, hand lines and ice fishing gear. If you start putting it together, there's a lot of different kinds of ways to catch a fish, jug fishing, just a lot of different ways. And so I've always kept that in mind. So I won't run out of 50 challenges, but I haven't thought about next year.
Well, Scott, thank you for sharing your story with us. I know the first time I heard it, I thought, man, that was a great idea. And I wrote down told myself I need to go fishing at least 50 times. Like you said, it's easy to come up with an excuse not to go fishing. So that was my first one. I tried to go fishing 50 times, and we too are struck with the flood bug down here in Kansas, and it's made it a little bit more difficult. So still plugging away at
it. That's been one great thing, and I've done some other interviews like this and some other media things. And some people just think this is goofy, and that's fine. But it really does. I really do appreciate the fact that maybe it'll spark interest in somebody else doing 50 of something, you know, 50 canoe trips or 50 whatever. I keep track of everyone I take and do. I mean, because I found that I keep a list, and, you know, when the middle of the year comes and I don't have 25 done, I got to kick myself in the butt and get moving, and those kind of things. So good luck on your 50. Let me know how that goes. Maybe I can interview on your podcast and how it went.
All right. Well, Scott, thank you again for filling us all in on the work you're doing in Iowa and your great fishing adventure. But now the tough part of the interview is over, as we are down to the final five questions. And this is a group of five questions I ask each of the guests that come on the show. And we always start real simple with, what is your favorite fish?
Yeah, that sounds simple. I would say brook trout, but don't be surprised in somebody else's interview, I would say smallmouth bass.
All right. I'm sure you've had a lot of great adventures and memories over the past few years, but what is your favorite memory from your career so far?
I would say working with our public. Does that sound strange? I truly enjoy working with and for the people. Of course, not all the people. We always have some that are more challenging than others, but really seeing people utilize and enjoying the facilities that I'm responsible for having the DNR provide, you know, is my thank you, I guess. So I always enjoy working with our public, and more so as my career nears the end, I really do enjoy working with people.
What is your dream job or dream location to work in?
Mississippi River in Iowa.
So the position you've had for almost your entire career.
I love working on the Mississippi River. Mississippi has passionate people that I work with. It's a beautiful resource. Lots of issues, a lot of challenges, which makes the career great. I would say Canada or something like that, where you have unbelievable fishing at times, but I'm not sure I'd want to live in the same place I take my vacations.
All right, you mentioned the Mississippi River has a lot of issues. So if money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on?
Money's not an issue. I guess, how about this? You know, if we could just put a simple buffer or filter strip along every stream or creek in Iowa, and I guess if money's not the issue, you know, the nation, Kansas as well, I'm sure that just a simple native buffer strip or grass strip or trees along all our streams, our water quality would just absolutely flourish, and our fish and for that matter wildlife populations would just explode.
Finally, if there is one point or one principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
I guess combine your passions in life with the things that matter. And with this, I'd say just quit worrying about what your coworkers or neighbors or family think. You know, just go after the things you really enjoy, your passions. Make things better. It could be just as simple as taking a kid fishing next week, but follow your passions.
Well, Scott, thank you again for coming on the podcast today. It really was a pleasure hearing about you and the work you're doing up there in Iowa, both fishing and with fisheries work on the Mississippi River. If people want to find out more information or get a hold of you, what would be the best way to do that?
Yeah, you know, you found me just with my simple old email. It's scott.gritters with a G, and that's at dnr.iowa.gov. And thank you for having me, Nick.
Oh, no problem. You'd be on my list ever since you went on KXNO with Kapaska, so.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. If you ever need something again, don't hesitate to ask.
And if you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter at FisheriesPod, on Facebook at facebook.com/fisheriespodcast, or old-fashioned email feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this 50th episode. You can download and subscribe to receive future episodes on your favorite listening app, or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 50th episode of The Fisheries Podcast. And remember, combine your passions with the things that matter.